The Home Show.
With Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, we start our brand new series on the impact on your home during life-changing events. This week, the upheaval of a newborn joining the house. We'll be chatting to the people behind Foxford Woolen Mills, one of Ireland's oldest textile businesses, still growing after 130 years. We'll look at lighting do's and don'ts, and Jennifer Sheehan takes us into the woods in her tiny camper van. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, we love to hear from listeners. So do not hesitate to contact us on thehomeshow@newstalk.com at any stage during the week. And you'll find me over on social channels, Instagram and X at Sinead Ryan. If you'd like to listen back to any of it, of course, all of our shows are up on podcast, where you are now on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud, on the News Talk website, or wherever you get your podcast now. Please like and subscribe. We'd love to get a review from you. Now, Foxford Woolen Mills was established in County Mayo in 1892, and today they export their garments throughout the world. They've recently opened their first standalone Dublin store in the Dundrum town centre. Joining me now to tell me more about what there is to see are Foxford MD, Joe Queenan, and Margaret Fitzgibbon, who's the brand manager for Foxford at Arnott's. You're both very welcome to the Home Show studio. Now, there aren't many textile businesses which have withstood the test of time. Joe, tell us about the origins of Foxford. It started with a nun.
Started with a nun and a Freemason, Sinead, back in 1892. Conditions were very, very poor in the Mayo area. And Mother Arsenius, the lady that founded the mill, was asked to come and visit and see could she come up with any solution to the poverty and destitution that existed there. She was horrified in what she saw. And she made up her mind she was going to do something to create employment that would improve the conditions of the inhabitants of the area. The idea of the woolen mills came out of the fact that there was the River Moy flowed through the town that would provide that power. And there was a lot of sheep in the area and a lot of idle hands, as she said herself, that could help convert the wool into yarn and into fabric.
Mm. And of course, textiles were a key business, presumably because the livestock that was there, there were people and women, maybe predominantly to do the weaving, and every house maybe, or certainly the well off houses, did their own thing. In terms of the beginnings, though, like they are inauspicious, but it is something that has lasted. What do you attribute the success to after 130 odd years?
I think there was always a huge emphasis on quality and design and a sense of place. And Foxford blankets, the word Foxford and it came synonymous with a blanket and with a rogue, represented quality. It represented a homespun quality, made in Mayo, made in the west of Ireland. Mm. And people identified with that.
Yes, indeed. Now, you yourself had an unusual start in Foxford, Joe, because it went through, like a lot of businesses, a tough time in the 1980s recession, for people who can remember that. And you were appointed as one of the receivers to the firm. Was that right?
Yeah, I worked for the receiver and he was appointed, Rory Quinn, in 1987. And the late 80s, if people remember, it was the last person leaving the country switched the light off. There was a lot of outsourcing, offshoring of particularly textiles to the Far East, and the demise of the Foxford blanket with the advent of the duvet was the final straw that broke the camel's back. And in August 1987, the nuns decided to appoint a receiver.
Mm. And you came in and did your job there, because the receiver has a kind of a dismal job to do, but nevertheless it has to be done. And did that spring an interest then in taking over the business?
In the early parts of receivership, no, it didn't. We just wanted to get a buyer and move on to the next project. But as I said, the late 80s were a bad time. People came and visited the mill, they saw the building. They looked at the projections and they said, no, not for me. Mm. So the only offer we had was from an Indian company that was going to take out the machinery and move it to India. So then I thought, look, this is a shame. There's a great story here. There's an opportunity here. I was only young, wasn't married, no commitment, and living with my mother, so there was no mortgage either. put together a few people that I got to know, and we put an offer in, which was quite unorthodox, really. A receiver put in an offer to a receiver.
Yeah.
But that was the only real offer on the table. And in October 87, took the jump and left my employment.
Wow.
And started trying to put life back into an old so company.
You put your money where your mouth was. How many does Foxford employ nowadays?
We employ 85 people at the moment.
Wow. Okay, so that's a huge source of employment in the West.
There was 85 when I came in there as receiver.
Yeah.
Back in the 40s, there was 240 people in a town of 800. So there's a huge influence on the town, huge impact on the town all right through for the last 130 odd years.
And what are the biggest sellers? Are they still the blankets, Joe?
Still the throws, yes.
Yeah.
People, the throws that Foxford used to do in the past were very checky and plaid and tartan and of a Scottish origin. But we've morphed into more of a contemporary range with more muted colours and some brights.
Yeah.
But it's still the throws.
It's still the throws. Yeah. All right. Well, one of the other things that you have and that you look into is bed linen. And Margaret, you are the expert. You're the bedding expert. You're based in the Arnott's pop-up, I believe. And you've a very famous fashion name associated with your bed linen.
We have indeed, Sinead. It was like a marriage meant to be when Helen came into the business in the
80s. This is Helen McAlinden.
Helen McAlinden. And Foxford was going along in its own way and probably would continue. But as Joe said, a lot of the designs were plaid and it just needed that sort of injection. And Helen had her own fashion and very much background in textiles. So it was a marriage that was meant to be. And since then, Helen also then has brought in the designs of the bed linen. So they're both a good marriage together. And as we move into the 21st century, everybody wants now a throw, which has converted from a rug. It's just a natural progression.
Oh, listen, we're obsessed with the old bed linen. We want pillows and we want cushions and we want layers and we want
layers, Sinead, yes.
Yeah, now I'm conscious of the fact we're in the middle of what may be a heat wave. Well, it is a heat wave. I don't know how long it'll last, but fingers crossed. And when it comes to bedding, people get very hot and bothered. And, you know, they're thrown off the throws and they're getting rid of the pillows and all this kind of thing. What is your tip for a good night's sleep in the heat? Is it down to the quality of bed linen or are there other things that you can do?
As you rightly say, Sinead, at the moment, we're hoping the heat wave will last for a couple of days. This is the Irish summer. So what we find that is the majority of people come into us in our stores in either Foxford, in Concreve, in our new store in Dundrum and into Arnott's with the same complaint. We're too hot. And so what we would recommend is Parkel. It has that crisp, cool feel. So if you ever experience those hotel sheets where you have that lovely, cool, crisp feel, this is what we would be recommending.
That's a form of cotton, isn't it?
It's a form of cotton. There are two types. The Parkel is one type. It's how the cotton is finished. And then there is a sateen, has a more, so I suppose, slippery feel to it. And it's how, again, it's the process, but not to get too technical about it. We would be recommending the Parkel at this time of year.
Because it's breathable, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it allows the heat out and the warmth
in. Everyone has the same complaint, tearing off the sheets. And again, we would always suggest that the quilts, they come in a tog rate. So we would maybe suggesting for a summer tog of 4.5. And again, a lot of people we're finding now have A-rated houses.
Yeah.
And they have that same temperature consistently. So we would be recommending a summer tog of 4.5.
Should we have two lots of bedding and two lots of duvets and all that?
I think going forward with climate change,
yeah,
and it's definitely something to consider. There's also an option of what we would call an all seasons quilt, which offers a 4.5 and a 9.5. So you can unclip it and clip it. So that would be
something
to consider.
That's very
handy.
Yes. All right. And you're getting beautiful quality and beautiful textures. So that sounds like a great hookup with Helen McAlinden. Joe Queenan, tell us about the visitor experience in Foxford, because not just a store, is it?
No, it's the mill is still where we are today, what was set up or built in 1892.
Yeah.
And it's a glorified hay shed, but it's a very fancy hay shed. The building is as it was. was, except we've painted it and did some minor alterations, but it has the same energy, same feel. So it's about 15,000 square feet of retail. There's 6,000 square feet of food. And the mill at the back of it, the weaving shed is situated at the back. You can see the looms working. So there's the full days. You can spend a half to a full day there.
Wow.
We have two kitchens, which everything is prepared on site. The second kitchen is where we do our own jams, chutneys and preserves. So there's a food brand emerging as well as a homewares brand emerging.
Oh, well, that's something to look at as well. You can have your lunch while you're down looking at the bed linen. And tell me, what are you hoping from this new pop-up in Dundrum Town Centre?
It's more brand awareness.
Yeah.
South County Dublin would have been a traditionally good hunting ground for Foxford. The opportunity came up in last April. We couldn't turn it down. We're very pleased the way it's going. There's about 800 square feet of homewares, really nice homewares, an Irish brand. And it'll be there for another couple of months, hopefully.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, one of the things, as I said at the top of the show, that I'm looking forward to, because I'm a brand new grandmother, you have a baby, a customised embroidery thing. Mm. That's a fantastic idea. So you can buy your blanket or your throw and then have it named.
Exactly. And that's going to be there, hopefully, over the weekend. And we offer that service free over the weekend.
Lovely.
Together with
lovely
10% on any News Talk that comes, a customer that comes in and mentions News Talk.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. There you go. Wander in, mention the Hope Show, and you'll get your indeed discount there. All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Margaret Fitzgibbon, brand manager at Foxford in Arnott, and Joe Queenan, the MD, for telling us all about that. But we're not going to let you go just yet, because we've a competition. You've been very generous, and we have a 500 euro voucher to give away to a listener of the Home Show, teaming up with Foxford. And that'll go now along way in one of those stores, and it'll be a fabulous thing to have. So to mark the opening of Foxford's newest store in Dundrum Town Centre, and if you want to find out more about that, look at foxford.com. But to be in a chance with winning that 500 euro voucher, text the word prize with your name to us now on 53106. That's 53106 for 30 cent. We'll announce the winner on next Saturday's show, and of course in the meantime you can drop into any of the branches of Foxford and have a look at what there. Guys, thanks a million for bringing us up to speed, and here's to the next 130 years in Foxford.
Thanks, Sinead.
Thanks, Sinead.
The Home Show
with Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk. The Home Show
with Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk.
Now, major life events can be an upheaval on the whole family and the home they live in, whether it's kids becoming teenagers, empty nesters, bereft at the silence, or reclaiming your space after divorce. Your surroundings need to change with the new circumstances, which can take a lot of getting used to. So in the first of a series we're starting, looking at this impact on the home show, we'll be asking a clinical psychotherapist and an interior designer for their help. And today I am delighted to be joined in studio by our own Denise O'Connor from Optimised Design, and on the line by clinical psychotherapist Stephanie Regan. Ladies, you're both very welcome to the home show. Stephanie, let me start with you. We're going to start with a new baby coming into the house. You know, a first child. It's a massive, massive change. And you can kind of be, it seems to me, completely unprepared despite all the preparation.
For sure. Despite the bag being ready for the hospital and all of the thought, I suppose, Sinead, that everybody puts into it, I think no one is ever prepared for a first child, and everything is a surprise. But when I think about it, and when you even there in your introduction, when you describe sort of and the coming home, you know, I think of clutter. There is so much. There is so many bits and pieces that have never been in the house before. There's, you know, over time, there's baskets. There's little rolling chairs. There's prams. There's all of these things, and so many bags and bags. That's all I remember. Bags and bags of things, and people bringing presents, and it's all very lovely and very wonderful. But as we know, there's a lot of psychological stuff going on as well, and you know, clutter on the outside affects how we feel on the inside. And there's an awful lot going on for a young mother. So I think there is a place for really, it's really quite important to think about the space and place that they are in and how that, you know, sort of interacts or whether it sort of accentuates or whether it can accentuate stress or whether it can calm stress. Mm. And I mean, that's how we all come in to try and, you know, people pop in to try and help, or, you know, husbands, partners try to do the right thing. But in reality, there's a lot going on.
There is. And actually, there can be that sense that you're barely coping. You know, every day you have to keep this tiny infant alive. And mm-hmm. and it can seem overwhelming, you know, when you see all that new stuff that suddenly you're in charge of, that has to have its place. And really, it can be just a lot just to get up in the morning.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, adjusting to being a mother is one of the biggest challenges, you know. And I think that we, you know, there's such a strong message out there about how one is expected to feel. And it is kind of a whole lifetime of building up that expectation that, you know, we hear about the great love and the great bonding and that moment, and we see it in films. And I think then there's something very internal then going on. Does the mother feel that? Does she feel that immediate bond? It's not always instant. Does she feel that immediate sense of euphoria? Maybe it's been, you know, a rather tough 20 hours and the euphoria is very slow coming. So, and I think this thing of being what we call in psychological terms, good enough, are we good enough? Now, some mothers have no issue with this. They could glide through, but for many, the relationship often that the way you've been mothered yourself comes into play here. And we know that when young women become young mothers, often what really comes into play is their relationship with their own mother and the way that they were parented themselves. And you often see either a return and a reunion, or you see a kind of a greater tension where perhaps there had been tension before. So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting time because it's like stepping over a kind of a fracture in some ways. If there, you know, mothering is a stress in itself. And yeah. If there are any fractures there in the relationship, or indeed in the self, you know, in our psychological selves, they can be pushed into view at that time. So lots of calm around, lots of support. That's what we all try and do, and try and help the person to feel confident, not to question themselves. That's the kind of role the outsiders play.
Yeah. Yeah, until they realise they're going to be questioning themselves for the rest of their lives with their children, even when they're grown up.
Don't tell them that at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I think that concept of good enough is probably one of the most important things that we can learn in life. And Denise O'Connor, who's with me in studio, Denise, like, there is that, you know, you can blame Instagram or Pinterest or, you know, whatever, but there is that feeling of perfection that's required. And babies, despite their tiny size, they come with a lot of kit that you have to find somewhere to go.
And look, it's not perfect. You know, just listening to Stephanie and her talking about how much pressure there are on people. And it's the same with our homes, but also with having a baby, about, you know, everything's going to be perfect and it's all going to work perfectly. But honestly, nobody can prepare you for having a baby. I'm sort of getting a bit of PTSD just even listening to all this stuff. So, you know, and even for me, both my kids were really early. So I had no bag packed. I had nothing, you know, like there were so many things I wanted to do that weren't. So it's not going to be how you imagine it's going to be probably for most people. So I think then when it comes to your home, really important just to sort of focus on how you want to feel in the space. You know, don't try and overdo it. Don't be looking at too many images and trying to get everything perfect. Like, this is a process. Your home should evolve. And definitely with a new baby, there's going to be so much change happening in such a short period of time that you want your home to be able to adapt and to grow and evolve. So I'd be really encouraging people to keep it simple. And like Stephanie mentioned at the beginning there about clutter, that's one of the biggest things you can do to help yourself before the baby arrives, is start that process of decluttering, of clearing out as many spaces as you possibly can, and just making room for you to think clearly, to move around, and just see the wood for the trees, really.
Mm. And one of those then kind of aids to help you do that is proper storage, because they come with a lot of stuff these days. I say these days because it wasn't always so, but people will give you clothes and bits and cutie things and hats and all sorts. And just finding somewhere for that stuff. And I think you know, Denise, we might have that idea of, oh, we have a nursery. We have this room that'll hold and contain everything. But of course, babies live in the whole house.
Exactly. And I would encourage people to try and think about where they see certain things happening. Like, I remember years ago, we did a home for a couple who had two very small kids and not a huge amount of space. But what it meant was that bits and pieces of the things to do with the kids were spread all over the house. And when we actually looked at their day-to-day routine and how they were living their lives, it meant that, you know, feeding was happening downstairs, but nappy changing was happening in a different room. The kids were being put down in a different room. It was chaotic, and things that should have taken short amounts of time were taking so long. The kids were unsettled. So when we kind of rationalized it and just put everything they needed for feeding in one space, everything they needed for laundry in another, it was amazing how the routine just simplified for them.
Mm. Yes, and it is that simplicity maybe that we have to get a little bit kind of check in with a little bit more often. Stephanie, I like, you're of the same vintage as me, I think, and there was something that seemed simpler maybe a long time ago when you were expected it was okay to borrow stuff, to have hand-me-downs, to not have to have it all colour coordinated for the photo shoot and the gender reveal and all that kind of stuff. Do you think there's an awful lot of pressure to get things perfect rather than good enough?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I do think we're in a, as you say, you know, when we had babies, it was, you had time, you had a kind of a privacy time. There was a time where there was quite a little bit of, you know, home chaos and nobody minded. Everybody took it as a given. And we didn't take photos in the labour ward. And we didn't, and we definitely didn't have our lipstick on. And, you know, we just, I think we understood that this was sort of, you know, a kind of a time of nature, if you like, you know, where it takes over a little bit and where we kind of, we let go of everything and we had a privacy to do it. And I do think that was a freedom, you know. I think that I see young mothers under tremendous pressure to be on top of things, to be good, to have a routine, have a good routine, have a four. You know, they'll talk about children's, you know, babies sleeping through the night. That telling me, you know, in 2-3 weeks they're sleeping through the night, and I'm thinking, is that actually possible? Mm. You know, it's sort of this pressure to get there, meet these milestones, and I think it's putting enormous pressure on themselves. I know society, you know, the external and the Instagram does it too. Mm. But there is a huge pressure on themselves. And that is often what we have to really try and lift. And I find it quite interesting, if I can add to this, that just this week I was talking about perfectionism. And the mothers who are perfectionistic to begin, i.e. always needing tidiness, needing order, needing, you know, things in their place and in their cupboards, they struggle a lot with motherhood because for that very reason, that it is a chaotic, you know, chaotic, not in the wild sense, but it is where routine has to go out the window and where you have to reestablish everything completely from the beginning. And I think there is a, you know, the people who are more relaxed, more inclined to let things be and be able to run, change direction and run with the flow, they tend to adjust better.
Yeah. And there is that stress that we have online because we're only seeing the best self of some of the celebrities with newborns and, you know, everything looks gorgeous and fabulous and they may well have care and all kinds of things at home that people don't have. Denise, when it comes to that, preparing your home for a baby, it has to be kind of function over form, really, would seem to me. Yeah. And how do you just keep things super simple, but also give that feeling of calm and maybe toning things down?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the first thing I would say is to look at the spaces where you, first of all, plan to have the nursery, that sort of thing. And if you've got any issues around, say, you know, if the windows aren't up to scratch, if there's mold, if there's damp, anything like that, that has to be a priority to get that fixed. And I know that's not the shiny sort of
pretty stuff
wallpaper, but that is so, so important. And especially coming into the winter months, like that's the health of the house and will affect the baby too. So really important to sort those things out. Then it's looking at ways to sort of, like for me, sleep with new babies is so important. So any half hour you can even claw back for either of you is going to be so important. So looking at things like blackout blinds, if you can double up, say a blackout roller blind and then a blackout Roman blind or blackout line curtains, that's going to just make the room lovely and dark. Look at your lighting. Lighting is super, super important. Mm. So, you know, we all know about blue light and how that disrupts sleep. Mm. But at the other end of the spectrum, you've got red light. And using red light at nighttime for feeding, that just means it won't disrupt your sleep rhythm baby,
okay,
making it much easier for you to fall back to sleep again.
So maybe get one of those coloured bulbs.
Exactly.
That are the low kilowatt, the under 3000 or under 2000, and just have it as a night light.
Like a night light, So that's a really, really good tip. Then lots of lovely sort of soft furnishings, you know, like rugs, anything that's going to dampen sound. Think as well about where you're hoping to have your nursery. Is it next to a noisy space? Could you maybe think about putting it somewhere quiet, that sort of thing? So all these things are going to help you just get maybe a couple of extra minutes.
And organization is going to be key.
Yeah.
So, and I know that you're a big fan of, you know, kind of your organizational space and your different areas for different things.
Yeah.
But it's really important when you have a baby.
It really is. And again, like I mentioned, you know, just think about the different things you'll be doing throughout the day, whether it's feeding, nappy changing, you know, so have your changing station, have everything to hand. All of these things are just going to make life so much easier. And then I think just going back to the clutter, which is really important, and just thinking about a lot of my clients over the years, if space is a problem, if you don't have a lot of space, it's okay to say to people, maybe we don't need so much stuff. You know, maybe it's all right, just maybe do something different or whatever. Because I know, like, people all want to give you gifts. People want to give you things they've had. Sometimes it can be really hard to say no, but just be strong on that front, because it's so true. Like, if the house becomes filled with loads and loads of stuff, that's really stressful.
Yeah,
it really is.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. All right. And Stephanie, finally, it's okay to not be okay at this time and ask for help for yourself as well. As Denise was saying, not just about the house and what people land on you, but it's okay to say, not today, thanks.
I think it's the key point, isn't it? It's okay to say, I'm not up for visitors. I'm not, you know, not for today. But I think the other thing is ask for help, ask for chats. The old style where, you know, the older person could help out, you know, be it the mother, the grandmother, that kind of thing can really help out, or grandfathers indeed. Experienced hands with the new baby are extremely helpful because they're not triggered the way the mother is triggered, you know, to the cry. And so they can get a little break. Absolutely. And the one thing I think, if I can say lastly about the household and the clutter, and it is that sometimes the mother sees it as a reflection of their own chaos. That's, I think, another reason why it does need to be handled, managed well, and if you like, where others really help to keep some order on the external world.
You control the controllables. That's all we can do in life, isn't that right? All right, Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and host of the Tough Love podcast. Thanks for joining us there. And Stephanie will be back for other episodes in this series, and we look at different life events the next time. And Denise O'Connor, Optimised Design, thanks a million for joining us on the Home Show.
Thanks, Sinead.
We've talked many times about lighting on the Home Show, but did you know that decorative lighting is considered the jewellery of the house by my next guest, lighting designer at Minima, Philippa Grant, who joins me in studio now. Very welcome, Philippa.
Thank you. Thanks, Sinead.
Now, you think lighting is one of the most crucial aspects at the design stage of a new home.
Yes, the lighting's totally forgotten, and we get plans in to our studio and immediately we would say, do you have a lighting plan? No. Okay, let's do a lighting plan. Oh, but that's much further down the road. No, no, we need to discuss this now, and we need to have this in a plan for this whole, how you're going to do your lighting, so that we can incorporate this into the build as such. So you're talking about the architectural lighting going in, you're talking about where you're going to position any sort of feature lights you want to do, you're talking about how you're going to use your space. You're also looking at the furniture, the layout of the rooms, where you're going to sit, what you're going to need in that area at that time. So it's really crucial to consider all this. And if you consider this from the very beginning, it'll just help you along the whole process of your house.
And it kind of makes sense when you're saying it, because all lighting needs an electrical output.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you've if you have the house and the builder has decided there's a plug going in here and there's a wire coming out of that wall there, then you're kind of locked into that.
This is what happens. And actually, when you say about plugs as well, say if you're doing a kitchen, you need a lot of plugs in the kitchens, and the builders decide, but you mightn't especially like what where they've decided to put them. So the involvement from the very get-go of this whole project means that you will be happy in the end. And of course, it's very hard to vision this when you're looking at plans and something maybe is coming out of the ground or it's a huge renovation job. But if this is all considered and if there has to be a few tweaks along the way, that's no problem. But it's not that you're sitting there going, oh, why did I not do this from the very, very beginning?
It's hard to retrofit lighting back
exactly.
in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, let's talk about then probably the room that causes the home show listener most angst.
Okay.
When I say the home show listener, I'm including me in that. And that's the kitchen.
Yes.
Because we all have these, or most of us now have kitchens which are big,
yes.
bigger, and they're multifunctional and they've got other bits
main
in
room,
they've got an island,
nice.
They've got dining, they've got maybe a seating area, they're out the back, all that. So zoning using lighting is very, very important.
Yep.
And we get stressed out by, you know, the easiest solution can seem to be stick spotlights all over the ceiling and you're done.
Yep, absolutely. Well, obviously in a kitchen, lighting is key. And I suppose it's probably the one place in your house that you might need to have spotlights. There's fantastic spotlights available now that are recessed, they're rimless, you don't see them, they give the right light, they can be directional within the recess. So there's lots of options out there, and maybe you just need two or three spotlights in a specific area where you need to have light for cooking and for just the details of your kitchen. But then there's all sorts of other lights you can bring in. I mean, kitchens themselves have so many lights within them, in the cupboards, under the countertops, that's also going to help you. So I think one of the important things is, and you said already, the zoning and also controlling the zoning. So what I would be saying is that you have lots of different ways of turning the lights off in the kitchen, but or dimming them, I think, is a great thing as well, so that you can have a bit of a glow if you're in your dining space.
Oh, we love a dimmer. I mean, it really, and you can get stylish dimmers now as well.
Absolutely.
In the kind of the chrome or the brushed steel or something to match up your thing. Okay, now talk to me then about the pendants, because the old pendant lights now, you know, come in for a bit of a bad rap because, you know, whether you have them over the dining table, which is where I have mine, because I have a big hood over the hob or some other place. Like, is there a correct drop for those where they should, like how far down from the ceiling or how far up from the counter they should be?
I think you should always consider how far up from the counter they should be. There is, they say, between 70 and 90 from, say, your table or your countertop. It depends on the room. What I always do is I like to be visually present, so that you might say, yes, we need to have it at this height, but there's always going to be a little bit of adjustment. It just depends on your windows. It depends on what's all around you. I think you need to be there when the electrician's hanging it. I think you need to be really precise. You have to have a good idea already.
Yeah.
And then you have to be precise.
Okay, Philippa, where can people find out more about you, Minima?
So Minima, we have a showroom in Hanover Quay, and we opened a showroom a year and a half ago in Ballsbridge as well.
Okay, and the website?
The website is minimahome.com.
Brilliant. All right. Philippa Grant, thank you for coming and joining us on The Home Show.
The Home Show.
With Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk. The Home Show.
With Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk.
Now, for some, it's the perfect getaway. Climb in, head where you like and pitch up. For others, it's a cramped nightmare, far from five-star luxury. And there's an outdoor loo to contend with. Yes, it's camping. Love it or loathe it, there's no denying it's immensely popular. And however you do it, there are perfect accessories to go with it. With me now is camping obsessive Jennifer Sheehan at Workers Cottage on Instagram, if you're following her, and many of you are. Jenny, remind us of your little camper van. Oh, it's a little dote. So I have a tiny house, if anybody following me will know, which means there's a tiny amount of parking outside on the tiny street. So I don't have space for a big, luxurious van, much as I would love one. And I don't have space for two cars. So I had to have it all in one. So I bought a 7-seater Nissan Serena, Japanese import, a few years ago, and I got it converted into a micro camper by the wonderful Pathfinders up in County Leitrim. Highly recommend them. And so they ripped out all the seats in the back. They put in a rock and roll bed, which is, you know, a bed that kind of accordions down flat and then rolls up into seats. They put in a kitchen, they put in a leisure battery. I've got a little camping stove. I even have a little shower. It's a little dream.
All in the size of a family
All
car.
All in the size of a family 7-seater.
Okay. Now, when you have that space to contend with, storage must be the number one consideration. And yeah, you already have a very tiny house, but this is taking things to extreme. You're living in a car.
I'm living
in a car, right? Everything has to be small, foldable, multi-purpose. Mm. So talk to me about some of the absolute must-haves for people who are looking into this. And like, does everything have to be nailed down for a start?
Yeah. So Pathfinder did a great job of building in storage. So underneath the seats and in the boot and underneath the kitchen and all that, there's so much storage built in there. So, you know, all the basics are covered. What I don't have is living space because the car is so small. And on a camping trip, like, even after a long day of swimming and walking the dog and doing your hikes and your barbecue and everything, there's still quite a lot of time left over where you really are just kind of sitting in a car. So I needed living space. So I got a driveway awning. Very common thing to get with a camper van. It's basically a tent that kind of affixes onto the side of your car and then you can take it off. And
these are great jokes.
They're on, like, absolutely.
Because it gives you maybe double the size again.
It doubles at least the size. So you have a whole big living space. So the one I got is Van Gogh. I bought it in Charles's Camping down in Blessington. It was, I think, around the 550, 600 mark. You can get a really good value one in Decathlon. It's the Quechua inflatable camping living room. Mm. I will recommend getting the Air ones. So if you see any tents that need to be put up, you can get pole versions where you have to put poles together and it's a bit of a whole thing. Or you get Air ones where you basically pump up an air structure and that forms kind of the skeleton of the tent and it's much
easier. And can you do that off the charger in the car?
You can. You can do it off the charger in the car. Clever. But I don't even bother because it's so easy to pump these things up. It just takes a bit of, you know, bit of pumping.
Welly.
Yeah.
Okay, so that attaches on around the door of the van then,
yeah.
Is that it?
So okay, there's two ways to do it. If you have an existing camper van, they normally come with a bead rail and most of these driveway awnings will have a little fixture at the side of it that will thread through that bead rail and that will attach it to your van and then you take that off and you drive away, which is really handy in a campsite because it kind of marks your spot and it means that somebody doesn't come and steal it. Hopefully they don't steal your tent, but you know, most of the places you'll be fine. Or you can get one that just straps over your car. So it'll have kind of a canopy and there'll be straps attached to it and you just pull that over your car. And what that does is it gives you a bit of a walkway between the tent and the car if it's raining, which it often is at some point during the day. And then you can get, you know, you can go between the two kind of interiors. And then what I ended up buying, because the strap situation is a bit cumbersome, you have to put it over and you have to peg it down and blah, blah, blah. What I ended up buying was a magnetic driveway kit. So it basically is a bead rail that just slaps onto the top of your car.
Fabulous.
And it's not perfect because in high winds it will kind of flap around. But for most of the time, 80% of the time, it's really handy. So it just kind of affixes the top of your car, allows you to attach on that little bead rail, and then off you go. You just pull it off when you're ready to drive away.
And where are the best places to get this stuff? Do you get it online or does it have to be sized for your car, or are there generic stuff out there that you get on O'Mara's or Amazon or places like that?
I've gotten loads in O'Mara's and I've gotten loads in Charles's Camping. I found Charles's Camping, if anyone is near Blessington, they're just so helpful. Like, they are obsessed with camping. They're super knowledgeable. So just go in and say, this is what I have, what can I get? Okay. I would recommend that first because it's not very straightforward. The sizing is really confusing. Mm. You know, I really would recommend anything you're looking at, go on YouTube and see if you can get a video of somebody putting it up and putting it down, because lots, you know, there's so many camping review YouTube sites. So
you're going to need practice, really, just to do it up and down and up. And it can be hard to do that if, like you, your van is parked outside your house on a street.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have that time.
And the one thing I will say to think about for a tent is that if you are driving away and it's a bit wet, then you have to dry it out. So is your house big enough
to have somewhere to like drape that tent over and dry it out.
Good call. Now, eating and cooking, are we still looking at little primer stoves or have things improved?
So I have a little stove built into the camper. That's one of the criteria for having your car certified as a camper is you need a little stove. So that's fine. It's a gas stove, but nothing beats a charcoal barbecue and I love them. So we've gone through a few and we bought one recently on Amazon. It's the Camping Moon Mini Charcoal Grill and Fire Pit and it folds up into nothing. I mean, it literally, it looks like an A4 pad by the time it's folded.
Wow.
It's super cute. And then it doubles as a fire pit, which is really, really handy. So it fits enough on it to barbecue.
So and then go and sit around and it and sing Kumbaya with your coffee. Excellent. Now, the shower, of course, we talked about your shower before. You say, I have a shower. Now, to me, that's in a little steam room with lighting and hot water and soap and all kinds of. That's not.
I have a hose.
You have a bag with water in it.
Well, I recommend a bag of water. I actually have a tank installed in the back of the car. So there's a, you know, a big water canister. And what I have is the Ridge Monkey power shower. So this is a full shower head with a pump at the bottom.
Okay.
And it affixes onto the side of the car. So I can at least wash myself off after. Now, it doesn't heat up, but you can put a few kettles of water in it and you're grand, right? You're grand. But what I really recommend for people, if they're thinking about getting something, because I think the thing with camping is you don't need to overstock in accessories. Just take off and figure it out as you go. But if you do want a shower, there's some great solar showers. And these are literally just black bags and they heat up in the sun. They get very hot. Even in Ireland, they can get really warm.
Well, of course, at the moment, they'd be perfect.
You'd have to be careful. Yeah. In this weather, you could burn yourself with. Genuinely, they can get very hot. So they're literally just bags. They come with a hook on top. You hang them at a height, be it from a tree or whatever else you
like
find.
Like with a solar panel.
No, they're just heat up from the sun. Because the entire bag is made from, you know, solar heat absorbing material.
Hilarious.
So the whole thing inside gets hot. And it does, I genuinely mean it, it gets very hot. So be careful. And you hang it at a height and gravity does its thing and you hose yourself off and you have a nice warm shower. So you can get them, again, Charles's Camp and have a great one. It's called the Easy Camp Solar Shower. It is $13.95.
Wow.
So if you're coveting an outdoor shower, start there, see if you like it. And then there's another one in Decathlon, Quechua. Again, have another one for €26. You can buy ones with kind of pumps in them as well for a bit more. But,
pressure.
You know, if you just need to hose yourself off and you just need something quick and easy,
And you have no teenagers with you.
Exactly.
Right. Jenny Sheehan at Workers Cottage on Instagram. Thank you very much for bringing us that. Are you off somewhere this summer?
I'm going to take off this weekend and then I'm off to Ackle in a couple of weeks. We have a family camping trip coming up, so it would be great.
Fantastic. All right. Well, enjoy that. And lots of great tips there. As I say, you can follow Jenny if you want to see that because she's always putting up bits and bobs about that. And I'm sure there's dog camping accessories for
so
Perry,
many.
But that's a whole different show. Maybe we'll get to that at some stage. If you like camping, folks, if you're a fan, send us in your pictures. Let us know what you do. I don't think it's for me unless it's one of those fixed mobile homes somewhere in Italy. But there you go. There's something for everybody. The Home Show at newstalk.com. And that's all we've time for on this week's episode of the Home Show podcast. It's been a pleasure having your company. And I hope you've enjoyed our mix of items. If you do have a topic you'd like us to cover, get in touch with us. You can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me on social channels, X and Instagram, Sinead Ryan. And don't forget that all of our shows are now podcasted. My thanks to Aoife Breen producing, Stephen McLoon and Peter Malloy was on sound. We will see you all next time for the Home Show podcast.
The Home Show.
With Colour Trend. Infinite colour from Ireland.
This is News Talk.